All right. Good morning, everyone. This is Brandon with the Iowa Healthcare Association, joined by our friends from AmeriGroup Iowa, joining us for our monthly managed care call for April 12th, 2023. In lieu of me going into all the details about every informational letter that's been released over the last month or so, I will just refer you to our first call from this morning with Iowa Total Care, where we went into a little bit more detail and at least listed out each of the info letters that would be of importance to members of IHCA. We do run informational letters in the most immediate bulletin following their release, and so you'd be able to find that information there, as well as any information we've received from any of the managed care organizations, managed care plans, over that period of time too. So those would all be in our bulletin, but you can reference that earlier call for a little bit more detail about those informational letters. So with that, I will pause here and see, John, if you have any updates or announcements that you'd like to make before we go into our pre-submitted questions.
Yeah, there are a couple things I wanted to note at the outset of this meeting. We have had some staff changes on the Provider Solutions team, and during this meeting, I will place in chat the new Provider Solution team boundary lines and contact information for a quick reference, and ask Brandon if at some point you can also include that map in one of your weekly newsletters that goes out to your providers. We're on our side, I'm also noting that we're cataloging the individuals who are going to respond to your pre-submitted questions that folks have prepped for. We do not have Donna Wendt today. She has a conflict with our state, a meeting with our state customer. And in her place, so of note, Donna has been promoted to a director level position, and the new LTSS UM manager is Megan Casebolt, and Megan is joining us for the first time today. She will be, she's been with the LTSS utilization management team for as long as I can remember. To be honest with you, we could not have had a better person move in behind Donna in replacing her in that role. We have a new member, staff member, Jean Mantel, who is with our Provider Solutions team and will be specializing in some of the more outwardly facing relationships with provider trade associations. So if you haven't already, Brandon, you will be getting an outreach. You and Julie and team will be getting an outreach from Jean at some point, doing a meet and greet and a discussion about her role. So that's new. And then let's see. I think I'll leave it at that. The other particulars would be just listing off the changes in the staff leadership with PSO, and that'll be self-evident when I drop the map into the chat for you all. So with that, I guess we can transition into the pre-submitted questions.
Okay. All right. That sounds good. The first one that we have is, this is a home health related question. And this is going back to the home health aid visits not requiring an auth from AmeriGroup for G0156. And then this provider, and I've heard from a couple here who have mentioned that they've been starting to receive more and more denials for G0156 due to a lack of authorization. And just wanting some clarification on if there's been any policy changes or what, I guess, if there's a known issue surrounding that denial for those services.
Hi, Hi, it's Jolie. No, there has not been an update to this code, and there was a policy change back in 2017 regarding PA no longer being required for this. So if you have any, let me see what they put here. So if you want to send any examples of the claims that you've been denied for this, please do so, and we can look into that further.
Okay. So I think I've heard from a few members who have maybe received this, and if you've submitted those denials, I suppose, to your provider rep, that would be the preferred method, or at least preferred starting method for this. And if there's any other comments on maybe experiences, Dawn, I see you unmuted. Do you have any comments that you'd like to make?
Hi, everyone. This is Dawn Hobson with Provider Services. And I just wanted to share that we have had sporadically finding that the analysts, you know, are kind of missing the mark there, unfortunately. I do need to just clarify that when you are submitting for the GO156 with the REV code, that you are sure that you're, you know, that you're billing with the Medicaid ID, which I'm sure you are, and that if you are putting the Z76.89 on that claim form, in one of the positions for the diagnosis code, whether it be the second, originally we said the second, but now we will accept the first through the nine positions for that. That can sometimes help this situation as we work through this. The other thing is, if possible, I don't know if this is something that is doable for providers, but I've been working with home health providers that rather than billing, if you're billing with a 3-2 bill type, if you switch that to a 3-4, that also identifies it as that, you know, service that is a Medicaid primary service as well. So those are a couple suggestions. They're not mandate. Well, the Z76.89 is, but it's just a suggestion to help along with your claims processing. So that's really what I wanted to share.
Thanks, Dawn. Can you, on the bill type, can you maybe, I don't know if you know this or not, but the difference between a 32 and a 34, I think, were the two numbers that you had mentioned there?
Yeah, and the one thing I don't want to claim that I'm the expert on bill types, first of all, but the conclusion and in my work with other home health providers is that typically the 3-2 was what we were standardly using. It is also the 3-2 type is also used for Medicare claims as well. And so once we took over and we joined, you know, two plans under Amerigroup with AmeriVantage and the Medicaid Amerigroup, we were just throwing out the suggestion that the 3-4 type may be the route that gets you to the right, you know, place, and it gets to the right analyst for the Medicaid primary.
Okay. So just a suggestion on if you have that issue, it's a possibility that you could try, and it might help to resolve some of the issues there. Again, I think Dawn said it well, but not an expert, but it's a suggestion on something that could possibly help rectify some of the situation.
Yes, thanks, Brandon. That's a good summary.
Yeah, okay. Good to know. Thank you. The next question that we had submitted ahead of time was very specific to one provider, and I know that Cherie will likely reach out to them, so I'm not going to go into that one. It was had to do with a provider maybe not showing that they were in network with Availity, but they are, and so just some confusion there. I don't know if anyone else is having any issues similar to that. Otherwise I'll kind of keep that as like a one-off situation. And I know Cherie is, going to be reaching out to them on that specifically. So, if there is anyone else having that issue, you can definitely throw it in the chat. And I guess if anyone else, has any comments, I'll pause for that too.
Brandon, this is Cherie, and I just wanted to generally say that, when people are in Availity, there's a drop-down box that lets you pick either your provider type, either facility or group. And so there were some changes in our system to kind of standardize some of the records. So if a provider has been used to using the drop-down and selecting facility, and then they're finding that they see a non-PAR record there, all they need to do is go back and select group, and they should find their PAR record. And so for the provider that had reached out, I did give her the numbers for what the PAR record is. But that would apply to everybody, because some of the records have been tweaked to kind of standardize things as we're implementing some new systems.
Okay. Thanks for that, Sheree. And I do see that there may be a couple other providers who may be experiencing that as well. And so I think I stated it incorrectly initially. They were showing as out of network in Availity, and Amerigroup showed that they were in network. And so the suggestion that was just made shows that there may be a drop-down issue. Maybe that's not showing that if you switch what you're looking at, like was just stated, you may be able to get the right information, I suppose. Okay. The next question we had, I've had a couple different providers reach out to me here recently who are receiving some audits from a special investigations unit, verifying services are being provided. And just wanting to, I guess, check, this is different than any of the reviews that we've received in the past or providers have received in the past. Usually those have come from cost containment unit. And so just wanting to, I guess, verify what the difference was and, you know, the purpose for the audit, if you have any clarifying info on that.
This is Dawn again. I would just share this much. The special investigations team is part of our program integrity team. So it is a different kind of review. It's a little more overall review of the services the member is providing in line with their case plan and that sort of, and the services that were performed and billed for. Our cost containment unit is a recovery team that is really actually looking at recoverers of audits that they do regarding billing errors or situations. So that it's a little bit of different audit. So it's not uncommon that you would get that. You would know the differences and who to respond to based on the information and the communication that you had received.
Thanks, Dawn. The next question that we have is, how does the MCO manage their residents' care in the facilities? There are some residents who have never met their case manager, and I think that this may be due to some different contractual requirements, but just wanting to I guess, start there and talk about case management in facilities, if we have anyone from Amerigroup that wants to touch on that.
And this is Amy Pulliam, and I'm a regional manager with Amerigroup. Currently, our facility process is designed for our case managers to check in with the facilities quarterly, and that's a facility representative. It's not necessarily our individual members. And the purpose of this connection is to confirm the membership with that facility in case any changes have taken place with that membership or their eligibility, gather information on any concerns or questions the facility representative may have, and then identify membership that has expressed the desire to transition back to a community-based setting and offer assistance as appropriate with that transition and discharge planning. And then also to ensure that that representative has the case manager's contact for any future or off-cycle questions that they may have. So, and with that being said, our facility case management procedures are changing based upon our new contract in July, but the specifics of that contract have not yet been released as to how that process will look at that point.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Amy.
Yes.
The next question is, I think, similar in nature. How does the process work when a resident no longer meets nursing facility level of care, and what services or resources does the MCO offer to help those residents transition to community and be successful?
So I'll take that question as well, because it does kind of expand off of the answer that was previously addressed. Basically, it focuses more on that discharge planning and the supports that would be needed for a member who has identified an intent to transition. So at that point, the case manager would be working with that case individually to ensure that they have access to all the resources and programs that they would be eligible for to support them in their success in transition to the facility, to the community. I apologize. So that could include the application for the waiver, other identified supports or services that would be available to that member, and then education as far as what's available to them through Straight Medicaid and other community resources. So just making sure, again, that we're working with the facility, maybe that member directly or the member's family, to ensure that those resources are accessed and that we start that process of application and enrollment in waivers or other programs.
Awesome. Thank you, Amy. And then we'll go to our last pre-submitted question before turning to the chat here. This is a question about the AmeriVantage dual plan, having been started about 18 months ago. And the question of when will there be a final fix for the Medicaid custodial claims to pay correctly when initially submitted and not being denied as a processed Medicare claim? Do we have anyone that can talk about AmeriVantage at all?
Hi, this is Dawn Hobson, and I'm not the expert on AmeriVantage completely, but I want to make sure that I'm understanding the question. I did read through that. What I'm hearing from that, and correct me if I'm wrong, if you are the provider, you can speak up and let me know. If you are experiencing nursing facility custodial room and board claims billed as Medicaid primary on the Medicaid member's ID, that is a non-covered Medicare service, of course. And if the issue is that it's crossing over to Medicare and actually processing there and denials, you would really need to reach out with your rep to get the information over to them as quickly as possible so that we can, get those claims in to get them reviewed again. There is a process improvement right now going on that is working on making sure that that training and that fix, so that does not continue to happen. That is going at this time. We don't have a completion date at this point. We're just working on training and making sure, but any dual enrolled member, their claim is initially routed to the queue for Medicare, just to make sure that we are, making sure that Medicaid is always the payer of last resort. So we are having some issues with that right now, but we are working on that. And then work with your rep, if you could, right now, to get those claims that are impacted corrected via the escalation process.
Thanks, Dawn. I would guess that at least this provider, who's been having these issues for some time now, will has already probably begun that process. And I think they're just trying to hopefully find an end date as to when they no longer have to continue to go through that escalation process, and where they'll start to be just processed appropriately Medicaid primary for them, I think.
And I just wanted to add, this is another, area where that Z7689 diagnosis code is highly recommended, as something that, you know, a provider can, you know, begin to add in there so that we identify this as a non-covered Medicare coverage service. It's just a helpful hint again, while we're working on, you know, the actual production fix of making sure that we can get the claims to the right place. And I dearly do understand providers are having, you know, frustration with this. You know, it just takes a little bit of time to sort through what needs to happen in order to actually get the edit in place so that it goes to the right site and the right team to review the claim when it's billed, you know, accordingly. So
I guess with that comment, Dawn, I don't know that on the nursing facility side they've ever had to use that Z code on their claims. I guess we haven't really thought about the process or I guess what that means on a nursing home nursing facility custodial claim. I don't know. What do you think about that? Was that more of just a hint or like a help?
Yeah, it was really just a hint. I have had providers tell me that they have started putting it on there. I don't know if it's, you know, it's not like we have a provider update that's requiring it or anything. It's just a hint. It's another way right now until we can, and we're just trying to really ease the frustrations and abrasion with, you know, providers as much as we can. If you're able to do it and it's not a big deal, I just, you know, want to throw it out there. I have had providers say that it does get the claims routed, you know, in the right place. Not a guarantee, of course, but we, you know, if we try that, you know, in that process of the custodial nursing facility, but we definitely recognize that we have that issue right now and are trying to fix that. So.
It's an interesting thought. I mean, we haven't really had to use that. That Z code is kind of just like a throwaway diagnosis where it doesn't actually mean anything except for this type of thing. So basically saying that this doesn't need to go to Medicare because it's not a Medicare approved service. And so I guess if there is anyone that wants to test it out, I don't know that having that diagnosis code would hurt anything. So, I don't know. I guess it's worth a shot to see if this could maybe help rectify some of those AmeriVantage custodial facility claim issues. Thanks, Dawn. All right. We'll flip to the chat here. I know, you know, we have only a few minutes left before our time's up, but I know EOB is another question that I see at the beginning of the call here. Where we have providers still receiving EOB denials, which I know that the Z code is supposed to be the code that would prevent those denials from happening. And so any further thoughts on EOB denials providers are receiving or any update, I guess? Doesn't sound like there's an update at this.
Yeah, point. I guess we would just need the individual providers to show us examples so that the provider solutions reps can track back and see what the root cause of the EOB denial happens to be.
And I know we've obviously had this discussion since 2016 about EOB denials, and I'm sure that there have been thousands of examples submitted on EOB. And so I think that, you know, just trying to figure out why it continues to happen. And so it doesn't sound like any fix has worked to date. And so I suppose it's just a frustration or some abrasion, I suppose, as what providers are having with EOB denials still, especially as we're trying to ensure access to home health services, the ability to improve these type of administrative denials that are having providers continue to struggle to get paid for the services that they're providing appropriately, really makes it hard to want to continue to take additional folks if that's a barrier for them. So.
Hey, Brandon, this is Casey at Iowa Home Care. And is there any timeline or date that Amerigroup can commit to? Or, you know, can we just get like a provider call together? Because, you know, I know, oh, hey, send these into your rep. And you're right, we've been doing this since 2016. And 6 years later, we still have not made progress. So I guess what's our next steps? Like, what can we as providers do? What can you as an association do to make sure we're going to get paid timely? You know, I keep hearing, oh, this is seven, you know, the Z76. We've been doing that for years now.
And even when we do it on a Medicaid custodial claim, it still hits the Medicare Advantage. It still denies, and they will not communicate between the two plans. It's out of control, the amount of time that providers are spending on things that shouldn't have been denied to begin with.
So I just don't know, you know, if we can put together a separate work group with Amerigroup, what we can do to help get this fixed for providers.
I mean, obviously that's something that, you know, we would be absolutely in favor of doing. I guess Amerigroup, do you have any thoughts on doing some kind of work group to help to resolve some of these recurring outstanding groups? I know that if we did put a group together, the providers that were in this group would commit to bringing many examples of their experiences. Just thoughts on, I guess, from Amerigroup on your ability and availability to participate in something like that.
This is Jeannie Mintel. I'm new to the Provider Solutions team, but I'd absolutely be willing to help spearhead a group with folks and have the appropriate individuals from the healthcare network provider team to be able to be there.
Awesome. Jeannie, nice to hear from you and meet you, I guess, virtually here. John mentioned you're going to reach out to me, and I suppose we can start a conversation about just in general, how the association and the plan work together. And then, you know, maybe one of our first projects can include looking at this recurring denial that providers are experiencing.
Nice to meet you. And yes, that sounds great. Sounds like a plan.
All right. Thanks, Jeannie.
And then, Brandon, we did have one more question from our billing person.
So, Brandon, this is Dawn over here at Iowa Home Care. And I will also say that one of the issues that is just a continuing issue is the fact that we never have a provider rep or the same one for more than a year or a year and a half. And then when we get switched to another provider rep, all the work we've been working on with the previous one just gets dropped. It's not passed off. There is no, hey, this is where I'm at with Iowa Home Care's issues. Then we have to start all over again. And then the new provider rep says, well, this isn't timely. I have things that I have been working on with provider reps since before Danielle became my provider rep, which was 3+ years ago. There's no consistency. There's just none. And when we get a new one, they don't know everything. And then we're starting all over again. The lack of consistency is very hard on providers.
Thanks, Dawn. You know, I can definitely appreciate the relationship that you build with your provider rep, and then overnight that is basically gone when there's turnover. And you know, maybe, you know, as we're meeting with Jeannie, we can kind of talk about the process for a handoff between previous reps and current reps to ensure that there's some consistency and what's been being worked on in the past can continue to move forward without there being just a cold denial, I guess is maybe what I'll characterize it as in the interim. So I guess we can throw that on our list to work on in that group.
Hey, Brandon, it's Julie. For the Amerigroup team, it looks like this G156, which has made the chat multiple more times, which we have not got to as we're working through the chat, it looks to be a known provider problem. I don't know that it's on your known list. It needs to be, not probably, but it needs to be. So I don't know who needs to reach out to Brandon and the association, but the denial for 156, which does not require a prior auth, is a problem. So can somebody from Amerigroup reach out to Brandon and I to have a discussion on this? I'm not sure why the denial is even turned on for it if it's not on your prior auth. But we need to figure out what's going on there and get it on your known list so you can figure that out. What, Jeannie, are you the appropriate person to reach out to Brandon and I, or who on the team could do that?
I'm happy to help connect individuals in any way that I can. Absolutely.
Can you guys get that on your known list so that somebody can start working on that while we, until we can have that meeting?
I would guess Jeannie's making a note of that right now.
That would be great. And then Jeannie, you have, I'm sure, Brandon's email already, since he's the one that sends out the info. Again, this is Julie Adair. I'm the VP for Home Health with the association. My email is just my first name, like Brandon, so julie@iowahealthcare.org. If you want to set up a meeting with Brandon and I, that's fabulous. I see Brandon put it in. Thanks, Brandon.
Mm-hmm. And then I see it. I'm flipping through. There's a lot of questions and comments in the chat, and there was one question about an updated map. John, did you have an updated map that you were wanting to throw in here, or?
I emailed it to you. I'm not able to drop it into chat.
Perfect. That works. We'll get that on in our next bulletin then. I know that we're already over on time here, so I apologize if we weren't able to get to your question today. But if you wouldn't mind, in the future, if you have questions, and this is obviously one where we've gotten several questions later in the day, yesterday, and then, you know, multiple in the chat today, it helps even more to get those ahead of time to be able to submit to Amerigroup to answer, and that way we can, you know, flow through some of these a little bit more quickly, since they have time to prepare answers and make sure that they have the right individuals answering those. So apologize if we haven't been able to get to your questions today. I do have a note of a couple items here that we're wanting to talk or have a group about, so we can work on those as well. So in the event of time, we're going to wrap for today. So I just want to thank our team from Amerigroup for joining us. Again, apologize for not getting to all the questions, but you can feel free to send those to me and I can pass them along, send them to my email. I can pass them along that way. But with that, I hope everyone has a great rest of their week.
Awesome. Thank you.